back the Cold War? After yet another week of mistakes, Donald Trump proposes ideological tests for immigrants and visitors to the United States. Another set of emails reinforces doubts about Hillary Clinton, and Russia expands its role in the Middle East. Those are some of the stories on the mind of news analyst Neil Conan this week. Neil joins us most Tuesdays from his MacNut farm on the Big Island. Good morning.
Good morning, Beth Ann.
So last week we were talking about Donald Trump's long-awaited pivot to a more serious campaign after a relatively well-received economic speech in Detroit. But just a few hours later, he was back on Twitter and back to some of his more outrageous remarks at unscripted rallies. At this point, it doesn't really look like he's going to change, does it?
No. In an interview with Time Magazine, he basically said, you know, I am who I am. And he talked about his advisors giving him advice to, you know, read more scripted speeches, but also about how he prefers the freewheeling approach that succeeded beyond all expectations in the Republican primary, and without realizing how badly that approach seems to be failing now, and that's why we're seeing reports of panic in the Republican Party.
New York Times came out with a story over the weekend on Sunday that portrays Trump as exhausted, sullen, erratic, also as someone who's bewildered, according to the report, by the very basics of politics. How can this be?
A really interesting story. I should point out that Time said he was obsessed by the media, a conclusion he promptly validated with a Twitter rant about the New York Times. And this was, of course, after he attacked the news media in general and after he yet again questioned the First Amendment to the Constitution. And that, of course, was just one of several fundamental mistakes over the past 7 days. And among them, in getting to your point about being bewildered about the basics of politics, was his insistence on a campaign stop in Connecticut, which was a complete waste of time. And you don't see Hillary Clinton stopping over in Oklahoma, but he has a deep-seated belief that places he thinks he knows, like Connecticut and New York and New Jersey, are somehow going to come around to vote for him in November, when he clearly needs to spend more time in, you know, places like Ohio and Pennsylvania.
Okay, well, he did campaign in Pennsylvania last week, and he also seemed to acknowledge that the polls show him down by as much as 10 points there. He also says that if he doesn't win Pennsylvania in November, well, the only reason is cheating. Now, today, the Washington Post poll has him trailing Clinton by 14 points in Virginia. Is he just making excuses for losing 3 months before Election Day?
3 months before. Yeah, it's what it sounds like. You know, I was robbed. They stole the election. You know, this is desperation. This is flailing, as if he can't see any reason he could possibly lose except that they're all out to get him. Mr. Trump has shown a weakness for conspiracy theories in the past. Remember, he was the heart and soul of the birther movement who demanded Barack Obama's birth certificate. And, of course, in that effort, he sought to undermine the legitimacy of the current president of the United States. And in this, you know, the election is rigged thread, he's undermining the legitimacy of the next president if Hillary Clinton should win, and the legitimacy of the most critical element of the Democratic system, which is the peaceful transfer of power, the moment when every losing candidate, this goes back to John Adams, says, well, I lost fair and square, and all let's all support the new president.
Even Al Gore, who actually won the popular vote, we all remember, and lost the recount in Florida when the Supreme Court stopped it, even Al Gore conceded the election to George Bush at that very moment that you're talking about. Many wonder if Donald Trump would be able to make that kind of a phone call if he loses.
And he'd better start thinking about it. Hillary Clinton's lead is starting to look pretty solid. Something in the 8-point area ahead in all the swing states. You just mentioned Virginia, way ahead in the ground game. That's the organizational strength, the get-out-the-vote effort in campaign offices and volunteers and phone banks and data crunches. This gets back to the panic in the Republican Party. They're beginning to think time is running out. Advanced voting starts in just 6 weeks, and it's not running out just for Trump, but for Republican Senate and even some House candidates. For all of Donald Trump's attacks on the news media, there's going to be one story I'm almost certain we're going to see, and that's, hey, Donald Trump is coming back. 3 months is a long time, with the media having just a single narrative of a runaway Clinton victory.
But her emails, though, seem to be providing some really good ammo for that story on a regular basis.
You bet. Last week, emails, these were obtained legally for a change, show officials at the Clinton Foundation asking for favors at the State Department on behalf of big donors. There's no evidence, at least not yet, that those favors were granted, But this just reinforces the impression of corruption that big rollers can buy access to the Clintons. This goes back to, you know, Bill Clinton and the Lincoln bedroom. She and her campaign have yet to figure out how to handle not just these emails, but the decision to use that private server when she was Secretary of State. This issue is not going to go away. Julian Assange and WikiLeaks promised there's more to come from the trove of emails that were hacked out of the computers of the Democratic National Committee.
Yeah, hacked allegedly by Russia. And that sort of brings us to the international story that we wanted to focus on this week, Russia and the Middle East. Let's talk about that a bit.
Well, we started this week with the Cold War, so let's loop around. There are stories today that Russia just started to use a base in Iran to send strategic bombers on missions in Syria. That Cold War reference is these are Tu-22M bombers. They were known as backfire bombers in NATO parlance. Now, 30 years ago, these were the subject of much controversy in terms of nuclear war. They have been used in Syria before, so that's not new. But they are too big for the runways in Russia's base in Latakia, to northwestern Syria. So they flew from Russia, and that meant that they had to fly with reduced bomb loads. Now, a base in Iran makes all those logistics easier. More to the point, though, it brings Iran and Russia into a much closer alliance in support of the Assad regime in Damascus, and it expands Russia's military and political footprint in the Middle East.
Not just Iran, though. Last week, Vladimir Putin welcomed the president of Turkey to Moscow. Now, just think back about 8 months ago. Russia and Turkey seemed to be on the verge of war.
Absolutely right. That was after Turkey shot down a Russian fighter that intruded into its airspace while it was on a mission in Syria. Since then, Recep Erdogan has moved from an embrace of his NATO partners in that situation to a considerable degree of isolation. You know, after the coup attempt last month, there have been extensive purges, arrests of tens of thousands of people, the revival of Turkish nationalism. None of this has gone down well with his would-be partners in the West, so Erdogan and Putin are finding some common ground.
You mentioned that Turkey is a member of NATO. Is this something to worry about, or maybe something else to be worrying about?
In the short run, I think it is. They do have some common interests. It looks like they may restart their trade. That was cut off after the fighter plane was shot down. But while Turkey and Russia have some interests in common, including, you know, sticking it to Berlin and Washington right now, they also have some really important differences. They're on opposite sides in Syria, for example, and as important as propping up Assad is to Putin, seeing him ousted is even more important to Erdogan. So this new warming, it may have limitations.
We talked about Russia's political advances, but things are not going so well militarily for them and their Syrian allies lately.
No, they provided a lot of energy to the Damascus government forces, the Assad forces, when they intervened in Russia last year. But things are, you know, the Syrian army was tired and worn out. A lot of its equipment was worn out. They got some new equipment from the Russians, but they're stalled. They did complete the siege of Aleppo, but then the rebel forces in Aleppo they broke the siege. They've reopened the supply route. Rebel forces in the northwest took back a village that they had lost. It could still get pretty sticky for the Russians and the Iranians and Hezbollah and the Syrian government. Those are now the big allies in this endless civil war in Syria.
And really, really super quickly, what about what's been going on in the past couple of weeks with tensions increasing again on the border with Ukraine? Is that going to get hot all over again?
It could. There's an election coming up in Russia next month. This could be be seen as an advantage to heat that war up, to build up nationalist forces again to back the government. But probably just for a little while. This is all based on a so-called terrorist incident that Russia says happened. It may not have happened at all. So things are very murky there.
All right. We got to run. We'll see what this week brings, and we'll talk next week. Thanks, Neil.
You bet, Beth Ann.
News analyst Neil Conan joins us most Tuesdays from the farm. You can always hear his Pacific News Minutes right here on Hawaii Public Radio.